Charles Altendorf, and this is the Know Your Place podcast, episode 65. On this week's episode, we're going to talk about the Beijing government and my perceptions of China. Stay tuned. Alright, and I'm back. So, this week I wanted to take some time to talk about my perceptions of the Beijing government and China as a whole. This topic was actually also brought up to me by Scott Strauss a ways back, but we didn't have time to get to it because the Brexit Kanzuk thing, I don't know, both things seem equally kind of hot and relevant right now. Given all that's going on in the world, but I guess I just didn't feel prepared to give this talk yet, so now here I am. As we dive into it, I want to start by, I guess, rewinding. That's what I constantly do. I start by, well, I don't know if I constantly do that, but that's what I felt like I've had to do on some of these subjects. So we're going to take a trip back to the past. And back to my middle school days, really, is when I have some of my earliest memories about what formed my perception of modern China. And I want to bring this up because I think it's interesting how public discourse has changed a little bit since then in the United States about China. And I also should preface this by saying I am an American, and, you know, while I do know a lot, I've seen a lot about China, I've met several people from China on both sides of the Beijing government. I'm not from there. I can only comment so far, but I've been asked by multiple people again to give my opinion on something. So we're just going to do it because it's my podcast and I do what I want. So actually, my first exposure, or my first early memories of the way China was portrayed when I was in school, was not positive. The very early memories I have from my middle school textbooks were, you know, it was going to be a democratic nation, then this crazy guy Mao Zedong took over and basically killed a whole bunch of people with his policies, and China has all these crazy policies, and oh, it's slightly opening back up again because of the new rules put in place in 1998. That was my perception. And I really want to bring this to light because I don't know, I'm called a Xennial, or not a Xennial, Xennial. I was born in 89, so I'm on the older end of Gen Z, of the millennials. I'm not on the younger end, so I'm actually really curious how China is portrayed now in textbooks, because I get the impression from what I see on the internet from some younger people, not all of them. Granted, I've met some Gen Yers that, you know, roll around making jokes about things, but I'm curious if it is portrayed in a more positive lens than it was when I was in middle school back in 2001. That being said, you know, so my first impression was definitely, I was given this negative narrative of China, that they stole all of our jobs, and that they, you know, they tortured their people, and they, you know, a very, very negative lens. So what I tried to do, I still didn't know I was going to become a geographer yet. I didn't actually know that until my sophomore year of college. But what I try to do, and this is something I think I've expressed before on this podcast. I think when we were talking about the New World Order episode, I try to have my biases disproven to me. because I don't want to be a man that walks around completely ignorant of everything and just completely biased. You know, I don't know if I do it well or not. But so why I say this is when we're talking about China, that was what I was trying to have removed from me. You know, like I was trying to find positive things to think about. I was trying to be accepting, you know, because I saw some pretty slanderous anti-Chinese stuff, you know, when I was younger. I mean, basically, you know, and everybody thinks that, like, this kind of rhetoric started with Trump, I guess, but that's just blatantly false. It did not start with Trump. It started long before Trump. I remember, you know, even when I was in high school, people were like, the Chinese, they're stealing all of our manufacturing. It's all their fault. I mean, people really dogpiling on this group of people in a way that people would probably say is a bit racist, you know? And it made me kind of very uncomfortable, you know. But I think that gets us into sort of an interesting area. So when I started going to college, I started noticing a bit that the discussion was changing, right? And maybe it's just my ideas morphing. I really don't know. But I'm going to bring up a couple YouTubers who did a lot of YouTubing in China, and I can sort of see the parallels on all of their perceptions about things. They actually lived there. I did not, but I can see their parallels in their worldviews, how it's like a cycle, I guess, that people go through from the West and how they feel. I don't know. So I noticed it starting to change, you know, like there would, you'd see these papers, you know. Well, I guess the first glaring thing I saw, I think we talked about it in my geography of the non-Western world class, but you know, you would start seeing these papers saying, well, look, they're industrializing really fast, their technology is booming, you know, we're just haters, you know, that kind of thing, you know, saying it's kind of wrong to judge this, and look, we have all these Chinese students in our university, you know, and you know, and I think to an extent, you know, I did feel a bit sympathetic, you know. I thought, you know, some people were kind of painting things with a rather broad brush, and it was a bit overkill. And, you know, so that's how I was sort of starting to think a little. And I don't know, but I did have in my question this deep-seated question. I will say I still had a bit of a preconceived notion, like, my big thing was is, you know, if we're the United States and we're trying to be, for lack of a better word, I don't know, neutral, or we're trying to do a foreign policy that doesn't necessarily pick winners or losers, isn't it bizarre that we chose in the 70s to recognize the Beijing government over the Taiwanese one? You know, even though we still have really close ties to Taiwan as well, we allowed the Beijing government to get that recognition it so desired as being the main Chinese government. And I understand there's a lot of pressure from Russia and other nations to recognize them. And now they're in the UN Security Council, I believe. But, you know, it's interesting because that's not, you know, everybody likes to paint, well, that's neutral. I mean, we still do business with Taiwan, but that's not really a neutral position to take, right? Like, that would be like somebody else coming along and still recognizing some people in the Confederacy, right? I mean, it's a, and I'm not saying, I guess, ultimately, the Beijing government, the Taiwanese government would be the one who is the, well, it's weird that this, if this metaphor held true, it would be like the South had won, I guess. But, you know, that would be sort of what's going on there. We're recognizing. So that for me was always the strange thing there. I always felt like that, you know, that's not really a neutral view to take, to recognize them as the official government of China. And that would come into play a lot later with my perceptions about things. But, so yeah, I was trying to be more tolerant, you know, and I met a lot of Chinese people, and I found them pretty nice, relatively. But there was one thing that I could, or, so I even, I remember, you know, there was a lot of people who were criticizing China over its environmental regulations when I was in a class a few years later that I was just doing to bolster my geography credentials. I didn't even need it for any type of requirement. I just did it as fun. And I, you know, I kind of pushed back. I said, you know, who are we to tell the Beijing government, tell anybody what to do with the environment? You coming around and telling them they're not, you know, fixing their problems fast enough when, but yet you're telling them they need to modernize to improve the quality of life for their people, even though that's what we did to modernize to improve the quality of life for our people. So, you know, I mean, it, I would say that I had a phase where I was feeling a little bit more lenient, perhaps, to the arguments of the Beijing government. But, you know, what's really opened my eyes recently is I've been hearing more and more information coming out from China in, I'd say, the past 2 years that has really troubled me about the level of what the Beijing government will go to. And sort of watching the counter-reaction from our media kind of terrifies me. So, where to begin? The first thing that I noticed that I found quite troubling was NPR started reporting on, well, I'll back that up even further. When I lived in Indiana, I actually lived somewhere where there was a Tibetan monastery. And, you know, living near those people, meeting those people and hearing their stories, I mean, essentially the Beijing government was trying to erase their history. And it's kind of the point that they completely moved and left, right? Like, they're not welcome back there, you know? They can't practice openly there. And it's actually ironic, at the same time, I met a foreign exchange student when we were there in Indiana who was a mainlander, a pro-mainlander. And I was always baffled. It's like, what do you think, being in this town where there's a Tibetan monastery? And she actually, this was bizarre, so she actually, she would go on about, like, oh yeah, it's a great place to go vacation, Tibet, and I love buying their little icons, you know, and this is really wild to think about, because, like, you know, we, I'm sure, you know, we do that to a degree with other cultures as main U.S. people or main Western people, but, like, it was really weird to hear that, because, you know, my, the way I was taught in university, and even the way I was taught, you know, in high school, kind of sanitized that, made it, you know. And that's part of the reason why I love being a geographer and get more curious about things, is you get your eyes open to the whole experience sometimes of cultures, or a broader brush than what the main people are just saying to you on the street corner. You know, you get a bigger glimpse of things. So, you know, so then I saw that, and then I was seeing articles that came out about the Uyghurs, you know, being repressed in China. And, you know, that sounded quite crazy, and I didn't really, you know, I didn't really know what to think, because, like, you know, it's hard, because there's definitely, countries, I would say, that, and again, not all people who practice Islam are bad or extremist or anything like that. I'm not saying that. But there's definitely countries where, you know, I know minority groups that aren't Islamic are being repressed. So it was very weird to see that, you know, the Chinese central government was repressing people who were practicing Islam. And I, you know, I didn't really know what to do with that personally on how I felt. But I guess I do believe it's happening. I've seen multiple reports from various places I consider relatively credible And, you know, it's scary. And it kind of fits into a larger theme that, you know, I was. That was the main thing this theme that I'm gonna hit upon was the main thing they tried to discourage me thinking in college was that China, due to the Beijing government, due to its communist origins and its authoritarian measures or authoritarian atmosphere, it's anti-religious, okay? And that's why the Tibetans get punished for their Buddhist, you know. It doesn't matter if you're Buddhist, Islam, or Christian, it's anti-religious, you know. And if they find you going too far down that hole, they will repress you. And, you know, in the beginning, I didn't want to think this. I wanted to think that all these people were zealots, like missionaries, saying, "I'm getting repressed in China." Oh, okay, whatever. But it does seem quite clear now that that happens. And it's kind of crazy to see people try and dispute it. So anyway, so we fast forward from that, and then I started noticing, you know, and again, when Trump got elected, you know, a lot of people didn't like his rhetoric and tone he was taking with the Beijing government, and I understand to a degree, you know, it was very disrespectful, and it's very potty mouth like, but the problem is that the is people do these two wrongs, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. So then, you know, people were then turning around and just trying to shield the Beijing government. And, you know, stuff is more and more coming out that that's just, I mean, that's just crazy to shield them, you know. They have such a tight grip on social media in that country, and they have the social credit score thing, which is insane. And the really insane part about that was then, you know, I started hearing about people trying to justify. You'd hear like these talk show hosts on the radio over here in America trying to say, you know, they're trying to sanitize it. Act like, "Oh, hey, wouldn't you like to have a social credit standing with your friends?" And I remember thinking to myself, "What? Are we in America or not?" You know, like, no, of course not. We shouldn't have a social credit score or, you know, microchips or, and of course there was the classic argument about the suicide nets. And, you know, I remember there were people trying to say, "Oh, well, you know, that's just a load of malarkey." And I'm like, I don't know though. I've seen actual pictures of these things, and, you know, it doesn't seem false to me. You know, and that's sort of, I guess, what I find so weird, and this is where I'll sort of get into these two YouTubers I follow a lot. So the main so I started actually fairly recently, because I was actually watching a Russian YouTuber who suggested a YouTuber that did stuff out of China who's actually South African, and he has a best friend who's an American who did YouTubing out of China for a while. And when I started watching this South African one, his name is Serpenza. So Serpent ZA is, you know, Serpent ZA. And his friend is called Laos Y. But the me and they run a channel together. I think it's called DM nah, NDA China. It's about motorcycling across China. They used to do motorcycling tracks together across China, which is pretty cool. But anyway, I was so I was watching this, and in one of his videos he said something that I had been thinking for years but never really expressed it so plainly. He was actually talking about how he really likes Taiwan, and you know, and he said what the Beijing authority, and actually it may have been Laos Y that said it in an interview later on. But they said what the Beijing authority wants is they want you to associate Chinese people only with the Beijing government. And, you know, you know, there is a conception of what America should be or what other countries should be, and most governments want that association, I think, you know, but it's much more on display there. So, like, yeah, so, and why this is so crystal clear to me. So, when you go in there, so when I would go in there and post an article, per se, where I'd be like, you know, the social credit system in China is bad, there's you know, there's banks now using nude photos of women as collateral for loans, and somebody would say, well, you know, that's racist. So, and that's what the Beijing government wants. They want to be shielded from criticism by using the guise that they are the only force in China, and that if you disagree with it, you disagree with all Chinese people. And, you know, it's really crazy that, like, I know quite a few people who don't see a problem with that. And it's really crazy that that ever got any steam, honestly, in my opinion. Because if we were to say that about any other country, people would be like, oh, that's just ridiculous. Like, right? Like, you wouldn't see Americans, and don't get me wrong, yes, there are some, again, there are people in every country like this, but you wouldn't see it in, like, a way that, like, the mainstream press is okay with it, right? Like, the mainstream press wouldn't go around saying, oh, you criticized Trump's handling of something, therefore, you hate everything about America, and you're anti-American. Now, hold on. I know I'm going to get some people in the comment section that are like, well, that's what Fox News says. But you know what I mean. A reputable source. You know, and don't get me wrong. There are some Western outlets, like NPR broke the Uyghur story, and it's not like, but I mean, you wouldn't see that. I guess what I'm saying is you wouldn't see that taught in universities about the American government, or the British government, or the French government, or the German government. No, this is only being taught in universities about the Beijing government, right? You're racist if you think that the Beijing government is bad. And that's, again, that's intentional. That, as I said, these YouTubers who both lived there for over a decade before they had to flee. That's the other thing, they had to flee at the end of it. That's what they said. That's the association they want. And that's quite scary. I don't really think that's, the reason why the YouTubers brought this up is because then if you're a foreigner or you're a minority or any type, you are a second class citizen there. And this brings me to the other point of what I find the most sort of disturbing about the Beijing culture. And I keep using Beijing for a reason. I'm trying to not generalize all Chinese people because I do believe there are a lot of Chinese people who are in opposition to the Beijing government and what it represents. And unfortunately, they are getting caught in this tidal wave that I just described to you earlier. But the Beijing, what the other thing that they brought up, which is something very interesting, and something I'm actually quite fearful is happening to an extent in my own country, is the Chinese. So the reason, so you're like, well, okay, but these YouTubers you're talking about obviously weren't very repressed if they were able to live there for over a decade making videos, even though it's technically illegal because they didn't have journalist license, and make money, right? Well, you see, that's the thing. China has what I would call a very weak justice system. So there are lots of laws on the books, but they were bringing this up that you don't get arrested or whatever, you don't get in trouble until somebody decides to make trouble for you. And that's really lawlessness. There's no other way to put that. That is lawlessness. And I worry about that every day here in America too. Like when somebody is trying to pass something I don't like, or like for instance marijuana, for example, right? You know, now granted it's becoming legalized in a lot of places, but I remember when I was a kid, you know, I'd bring up to people, you know, it's really dumb and harmful that this is illegal. People would be like, well, you know, nobody's gonna report you for it, but what if they do? And you can see, you know, we have a crazy jail population because of it and lots of ruined lives over it. And that's the thing, you know. It's all about when somebody – everybody's always like, oh, well, don't worry about these kinds of laws until they affect – but until they get affected. Then all of a sudden they're worried about them. And, you know, that's why I'm very skeptical of any new laws that come on the books in America, because I don't really believe we need new laws. I think we need to reform the current laws we have, and I think we could probably get by with a substantial percentage less of laws in this country. I really believe that. But, you know, that's just me. So anyway, the reason why I say this is so, if you can imagine the sort of bad outcomes that's had in America in certain policies, you know, imagine that taken to the umpteenth next level. So, you know, in America, at least, you know, if you get hit pretty hard with a sort of kind of BS law, like, you know, there's a recourse for you in some way. You can, for instance, there was a guy I was listening to an NPR story about in Ohio that had a speeding ticket fine, and he couldn't pay it right away, and whatever county he was in Ohio kept re-jailing him because he kept not being able to pay. He kept getting jobs, but he kept getting fired because he kept getting re-jailed for not paying back these fines that just kept occurring and occurring and occurring because he'd be in jail, and they charge him money for being in jail and for court cases, and it was completely bogus, right? Well, eventually, and this cycle did go on for 20-some years, but eventually the ACLU got involved and took up his case and helped him win. There is no ACLU in China. There is no recourse. There is no, you know, or for instance here, you know, civil asset forfeiture has been a big slug-em-out fight, right? And, you know, the reason why it's slowly getting reeled in is because, you know, there were lots of lawsuits, and eventually it made it to the Supreme Court, and there was a ruling. That doesn't happen in China. So, yeah, you can get away with things if you're not a big deal. If you stay in line, you know, you can get away with things. But, you know, then, you know, when somebody decides they don't like you, boom, they hit you, and they hit you hard. And that's what happened to this Lao Swai guy. He was pretty much explaining was that he and Serpent Zha, we were recording, they recorded all this stuff, and they had a relatively fine life. They even got married and were trying to start families there. And, you know, somebody decided that they didn't like what Lao Swai was doing, what he was photographing or whatever. And one day they decided to contact the right people to go after him. And he had to flee. He had to flee or face arrest. And, yeah, so go ahead and look that story up. You know, that's pretty crazy. But that's the thing. That's why you, in my opinion, that's the absolute most terrifying type of law to live under, is one that's completely malleable until you make the wrong person mad. And that's why I'm constantly vocally outspoken against that happening here. And that's why I'm terrified to even visit China as a tourist. Because, you know, I can make the wrong person mad, and then all of a sudden I can't leave China and I'm under arrest, you know? And, yeah, so that's my main thing with the Beijing government. That's what I don't particularly, I find that very disturbing. And then the other thing that, is also kind of terrifying and nuts to me is, so they're not content enough just to, you know, impose this upon their group of whatever the main, I guess, Mandarins are the main people. But, you know, their main group of Chinese people, they're not content enough to do this to the main Chinese people. No. They want to expand, right? So now that, you know, the UK's 100-year deal on Hong Kong was up or whatever, it's like overnight, they made all these promises. Oh, we're not going to, you know, try and revert. We're going to allow Hong Kong to be Hong Kong, and we're okay with that. Nope, they're not okay with that. So now here we are, we're getting, I forget how long it's been now since it happened, but here we are, we're like a decade or so in, and now they've basically abolished all of Hong Kong's autonomy overnight. And it's crazy. It's like, you know, and it's crazy because then you bring up these sorts of things, and like I said, you get people saying, well, you're only saying this because you're racist, or you're anti-Chinese, or you're anti whatever, you're just jealous because they're growing faster than America or something like that, you know? And it's like, no, I'm bringing it up because these are human rights violations. Like, this is a bad scene. And, you know, if we don't bring this up, you know, then we're essentially saying that these human rights violations don't matter. And once we don't believe in that, what makes us any different than, you know, what makes anything special? Why even found America then? Why not just go back to a monarchy if you don't care about human rights violations? You know, I find it disturbing. And this is, again, not to say I don't see any problems with America. There absolutely are problems in America, but there is so little recourse in China. It's terrifying. In the areas controlled by the Beijing government. And the fact that they are aggressively trying to expand as well is really worrying. You know, making all these veiled threats at Taiwan, trying to, you know, they want the South China Sea to be called the South China Sea, you know, trying to expand their boundaries in it all the time. It's quite maddening. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know where this ends. I don't know if this ends in a war or not, or if they collapse from within, you know. I really can't say. I would prefer they collapsed from within. Personally, I think that would be better for everybody. But I don't know. So anyway, yeah, that's pretty much all I think about the Beijing government. I think it is a repressive regime. And it's terrifying that it controls such a large amount of land and a large amount of people and a large amount of technology. Oh, that's the other thing I didn't bring up. So it would be another thing, too. Once again, like I said, if they were just even trying to expand in their region. But, you know, we just had a professor at Harvard get caught pretty much spying for them, selling technology to them. And, you know, I don't know how I feel about, you know, technology for profit as a libertarian, you know, but I do know that this guy was selling technology to them, and these are the same people who want a social credit system and would love to expand it around the world, so, yeah, that's terrifying. So hopefully, I think people are becoming more aware that we can't just shield them from criticism all the time, but it's terrifying. And of course, the World Health Organization fiasco, where, you know, with coronavirus, where, you know, they were trying to downplay what was going on, and Taiwan was trying to raise the alarm. And, you know, I guess for me personally, if I had my own company or if I were the government, I just don't see what you gain from dealing with them, other than misery. You know, like, yeah, okay, maybe you get a little bit more money in the short term, but in the long term, you have to put up with so much nonsense that it just doesn't seem worth it. But that's just me. What do I know? Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and sign this one out, but yeah, I'm skeptical of them, and, you know, I kind of find it baffling that other people are always trying to shield the Beijing government for criticism. It's kind of bizarre. Peace.
Check out the Know Your Place podcast on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/knowyourplacepodcast, all one word, or on Facebook at facebook.com/knowyourplacepodcast, all one word. And we will be coming soon to YouTube and iTunes, and maybe another social media platform near you. Special thanks to my wife, Sarah, and Jay Graff for the riff.